Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, it may be arguably the greatest sports day of the entire calendar year, but Binkley, take a nap before the show. What's going on, Binkley? Crack open that kickstart. Ladies and gentlemen, Jay Binkley.
Good morning, Kets. Good morning, indeed. The Masters rolling along. They had to bump it up. Even you were a little bit surprised this morning. Hey, Tiger tees off this afternoon.
He's wearing that Sunday red, per usual. Looked pretty sharp, although Ricky Fowler may have beaten that orange.
Man, I bet the networks are wishing this one, or CBS wishing this one, a little bit later on.
For sure they are.
You get that draw. I think people are still watching, though. Although it feels a little bit like the British Open, a little bit, that you're waking up, but you're seeing the whole thing now in the morning instead of just seeing the finish.
I mean, you've got to make sure to get the top guys through before, the nobodies that are like 10 back that, you know, maybe made the cut but dropped off Saturday.
Well, Francisco Molinari minus 13, Tiger Woods minus 10 right now as Tiger Woods is plus 1. Through five. Molinari even through five. Tony Finau, American, plus one through five. But why? I'm curious why you say it's the greatest day in sports, Kets. That's an interesting one because I always think that I always like the divisional round of the playoffs on the weekend because you get the two games after the wild card weekend. Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, you can't beat that. But I always enjoy October because you have the NHL, NBA, you have college football in midswing, the NFL in midswing.
It's the playoffs, though, Binkley. Playoffs in both the NBA and NHL. You've got the final round of the Masters. And to put the cherry on top, tonight is the premiere of the final season of Game of Thrones.
But that's not a sport.
Oh, it's not a sport, but man, oh man, do people pay as much attention to that as they do anything else in life.
I feel you.
I told you this before the show, but I said that I would not be surprised if there are as many people that watch tonight's first episode of season 8 of Game of Thrones as people watch the Super Bowl. It is that popular of a show, Binkley.
But how could the ratings even touch? It's a cable program. You're talking about something on free over-the-air
television.
It's the
most watched show in, like, television history, Bink.
Okay. I don't think it touches the Super Bowl or comes close to it. I think that's insane.
I mean, worldwide audience of Game of Thrones is pretty, pretty high.
All right. Anyway, Tiger Woods, three back from the lead. What would that mean for Tiger Woods to win this one? I mean, he hasn't won a major since 2008. The U.S. Open. To be honest with you, I think it'd kick start off a great season of golf. If he was able to win this, you know, last year he wins the Tour Championship, finishes second in the FedEx points. This year he's played five events, made all five cuts, two top tens. He's been top 25 four times this season. But to me, think about that. It's been 11 years since he's won a major.
I think at this point, if he is able to win a major, because, look, at this point, I mean, his master chances are probably, I mean, he's three back right now through six. I mean, there's still a lot of golf to be played. But I think for him, it would take a lot of pressure off of it because, as you mentioned, it's been so long since he's won a major. And that's kind of been the conversation of a lot of people is, like, you know, he hasn't won the big one in a very, very long time, and everybody's just kind of waiting for that first one to happen post all of his surgeries, post the Thanksgiving Day, mishaps that he had back in the day. But I just, you know, at this point, it's all we've talked the talk. Now it's time for Woods to finally walk the walk. And, I mean, this is, He's had a couple close calls in the last few years, but this is probably the best chance he's had in a while to win the next major.
Well, Francisco Molinari, right now a three-stroke lead. 36-year-old Italian. Highest finish he's ever had in the Masters, finished 20th. U.S. Open, 23rd. He's won the Open. He won the British Open last year in 2018. PGA Championship tied for second back in 2017. So we're talking about a guy here that's won a major. Will he melt down with Tiger Woods? I mean, that's the question. Because we've seen so many guys melt down when Tiger Woods is there on Sunday. But Molinari, you're talking about a guy that's won a major. Will he melt down or not? I think Tiger Woods is one of the most compelling stories in all of sports. He's a superstar that fell down.
I mean, he's definitely been a riches to rags and kind of back to riches if he's able to come back and win a major here. I mean, you know, this is a guy who was not just well-known but famous back in the early to mid-2000s, and then he kind of had his demises a little bit with his personal life that kind of, you know, got to the forefront. And, you know, now he's really trying to make a comeback. And, you know, you have to give all the respect in the world to Tiger that he's out there doing it, because let's be honest, he doesn't need to earn another dime in his life. I mean, the guy is financially set himself up, his kids well, and his grandchildren, maybe even the generation after that,
include his ex-wife.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like he doesn't need the money. He can retire to Jupiter, Florida, and just live there for the rest of his life, not compete in another PGA event. But you know, he's out there trying to resurrect his legacy, because in a lot of ways it has been tarnished.
My whole thing with Tiger is this: it was so fun when he came onto the scene and he started winning. And Tiger himself he created his own defeats at times. Because so many people picked up the game of golf because of the enjoyment that watching Tiger Woods. And more people, because Tiger Woods wasn't your country club, you know, silver spoon baby. You know, he's a guy that was pushed by his dad. He's one of these, remember, why was the name slipping me? The former quarterback of the Raiders, Marinovich.
Yeah, Todd Marinovich.
Remember how he grew up? I mean, his dad wouldn't let him in.
Dad was a psycho.
He threw 4,000 footballs through a hoop every morning. And we've seen guys like that have been pushed, you know, since they were kids to be robo-athletes. And Tiger was pushed that way a little bit by Earl Woods. But he did it the hard way. You know, when he came up and became popular, and then he had that fallout. And he became a punchline nationally because of what happened. I actually started liking Tiger Woods more after. I always liked Tiger Woods, but I even rooted for him harder once he was trying to make that comeback. Because we saw superstardom, and then you fall from grace, then can you get it back? And he's gotten it back. I mean, people don't care. They don't care what happened to Tiger, nor should they, because what happened to Tiger was a personal thing that was between, you know, him and his wife. There was nothing illegal that happened. It was just...
It's just an incident.
It was a personal matter in his own life that we shouldn't care about. We all have our stuff, but Tiger Woods did. And the amount of guys that kind of turned their back on him when it happened, it always bothered me. Like some of the European golfers and, you know, even guys that he hates, like Ian Poulter and these guys, that turned their back on Tiger Woods. It amazes me how many people snickered and laughed and loved seeing his demise, but yet when they went to cash that check or that purse for winning golf tournaments, why was that purse so high? Why? Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods was there. No, and I think that's, you know, when his demise and the incident on Thanksgiving Day happened, golf and the PGA really took a huge nosedive. They took a long nosedive because Tiger had, you know, Tiger and Phil, you could argue Phil was kind of in that same category, maybe not to the level, but, you know, he was mainly in that conversation. Tiger was the reason the PGA got as popular as it did in the early and mid-2000s.
There's no question about it.
There's no question.
People were watching golf that never watched golf. People were playing golf that never played golf. The spike in people going out to municipal courses and playing golf was because of Tiger Woods. I have never seen one guy means so much to his sport than Tiger Woods means to golf. To me, there is nobody. You know, don't give me LeBron James in the NBA. Don't give me any of that. Tiger Woods means more to that sport. I mean, there's other stars in the NBA. The NFL doesn't have one guy. Tom Brady's a big superstar, but there's so many other stars in the NFL. But Tiger Woods, it's amazing the ratings when he's playing and when he's not. Like, people care to watch. I mean, even if Tiger Woods isn't playing well, just the Tiger cams that they've had on him in the past. But people know who Tiger Woods is. He is transcendent. Now, I'm not sure that, you know, most people who don't follow sports will probably tell you who LeBron James is. I have no doubt that they would. People that don't follow sports would probably be able to tell you Tiger Woods because he transcended into news stories as well, and he made it out there where maybe your wife doesn't watch, you know, much sports, but she knows who Tiger Woods is. Everybody knows who he is. I mean, he fell from grace, but he came back. It's one of the great stories. It's kind of, you know, I'm waiting for Johnny Manziel to.
You mean John Manziel? He goes by John now.
I'm waiting for Johnny Football to turn things around, because when he came to the scene, he was the top thing in America. But we wait for people to fall. We wait for people to fall. We like to see that story fall. And people laugh at Johnny now, but he's coming back. You know, it's funny how, like, Tim Tebow even. Tim Tebow lived his life. I mean, Tim Tebow is a great human being. I mean, what he does with charities, what he does with, I mean, the guy's a good guy. You know, he's a believer. He doesn't do anything wrong. But people wanted to see him fall. You get to the certain stardom level and people like to see you fall. And with Tiger Woods, it's about the coming back. Because people enjoyed seeing us fall, but now I think people enjoy more seeing the comeback. It's just funny how we see these stars, and people actually wait for them to fall. Very interesting stuff. Cody Tapp, the Kansas City Royals, playing some good baseball and allowing one run in the last two games against the Cleveland Indians, who basically, let's face it, this division is up for grabs this year. We'll talk to Cody Tapp live at the K next.
Big Sunday.
Welcome back to Big Sunday. Jason Katz producing. He calls it the greatest sports day of the year because of Game of Thrones. I don't know how those things correlate.
And Cody Tapp will back me on this. But no, it's okay. Final round of the Masters. You've got NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs.
Slaying dragons is not a sport, Katz.
Oh, I think Daenerys Targaryen would have something to say about that.
Did you see that throw from the Night King? How is it not a sport?
Cody Tapp joining us now on his from his room out at Kauffman Stadium, where by the magic of technology, he can just join the show whenever he damn well pleases. What's up, Cody?
Not too much. How are you guys? You neglected to mention Royals baseball on a Sunday, too. There's plenty of sports to get into today. It's loaded.
No, it is. And I'm going to talk a lot of Royals from around this show, because Whit Merrifield said something the other day when he was at the day 30 of the hit streak when he tied George Brett. Remember when he grabbed the microphone, Cody? And they didn't grab the microphone, but he said, "I have something to say." You know, before he went on and talked about himself and said, "Hey, we're a good team. We know we're a good team. We're much better than the way that we're playing. Stay with us, fans. Stay with us, media. Don't leave us." It almost reminds me of 2014 when the Royals had just gotten beaten by the Houston Astros at home, and Houston wasn't very good at that point. And Ned Yost, after the game, saying, "I don't know what's going on. We're a much better team than the way we're playing." And then they turn things around. Rollo Banez talked to him, and the rest is history. Is this Royals team much better than what we saw during that 10-game losing streak?
Yeah, they played better. Like, they were minus 20 to start the season. So it's not like they were playing, you know, like they should have had the Mariners record but had their record at 2-10 at that time. But they were playing better. The offense was better. They went through a rough stretch with the starting pitching. But even that didn't change. That was, like, the last games of those streaks. The early parts of those games, it was all like, we're mostly tied or in the lead in the seventh. Expect to win about half of those, and instead they lost all of them. This team probably should be more like 7-7. Like, that's, you know, like, realistically, that's where they should be. And if they were 7-7 right now, and the offense was performing, and Mondesi and Whit Merrifield and Gordon were all going the way they were going, and Brad Keller was off to his start, you'd be feeling pretty good. But because they had that 10-game losing streak, nope, that quickly changes the feeling there. And so, yeah, they're better than their current record is right now. I would say that.
Well, it's funny, too, because this team was 41 games under 500 before the All-Star break last year. Five after it. As a matter of fact, there was a stretch in August where they were the best team in baseball. What's funny is how good this team can be when they want to be. But this Cleveland Indians in this division, Cody, when you look at this division, you know, when Witt said we're not out of it, you know, come on, I don't want to sit here and talk about Royals winning the division. But let's face it, Cleveland scored one run against the Royals this weekend. They have the worst batting average as a team in Major League Baseball. They scored the third fewest runs in Major League Baseball. To me, Cleveland, they should be more concerned about the Kansas City Royals, about their team.
Well, you know, in Cleveland's, man, boy, you know, for a team that is still tied for first, you hate to, like, nitpick them when the Royals are 4-10. That offense is nowhere close to what it used to be a couple years ago during those World Series runs. And I know they're missing Lindor and Kipnis and Zimmer, and they've got their own problems, but and they've still pitched pretty well. But generally speaking, yeah, this division's not very good. Like, it hasn't been good for a couple of years, and this year doesn't look any different. That's what sucks so bad about the 10-game losing streak, is that if you were hovering at 7-7, you might start talking yourself into stuff like that. You know, you might be like, well, I don't know, no one particularly good in this division. Maybe you could hang around it a little bit longer than, you know, last year where they didn't hang around it at all. Maybe you hang around a little bit longer than some people expected. But, you know, it's going to be hard for the Royals. They got to just be about winning series right now. And they've already won this one. A sweep would be great. And then they start a 10-game road trip, and that's a whole nother challenge. So we'll kind of see how this team plays out. We'll have a pretty good grasp of, you know, if that was the team playing well but still losing and now they're going to play poorly and lose, or if they're going to go on a little bit of a mini hot streak here heading to, you know, a 10-game road trip after today.
Let's talk about Alex Gordon for a second, Cody. So we're talking to our Royals insider, Cody Tapp. Leads the team in on-base percentage, leads the team in RBI. He's hitting .356. We saw this, Cody, the last 22 games of the year. Once he got moved to the three hole, it became much different. You know, he was hitting sixth, seventh, ninth so much. You go back through the last couple of years, he barely batted third, and there was reason there. You know, Hosmer was here and everything else, and Moose, but he never batted third. But to have Witt and Mondi hitting in front of him, I remember talking to Gordon last year, and he loved it. He loved Witt and Mondi because he's seeing fastballs. And I don't know if it's that simple, but Gordon himself even said at FanFest, I hope I'm hitting third. Well, this Alex Gordon, if people haven't been paying attention, is a really good version of Alex Gordon.
And Soler's not even hitting well behind him yet. So
yeah,
he could get even more protection if Soler ever gets hot again. I think he made changes. Ned's talked about it. And really, like, it's not a knock, but he's been, you know, pretty blunt. He's like, you know, he finally listened to some coaching. That's the way Ned's put it before. Like, you know, he finally made some adjustments after, you know, this kept slipping away. And I think it all started back with, like, an injury in 2016. And he just wasn't quite the same after that. And then it just took years to make the adjustments needed to kind of get himself back where he needed to be. I don't think it's all protection helps. Mondesi hasn't even learned to be patient yet. Mondesi's hitting .293, has 10 extra base hits, which is fifth best in baseball, or fifth best in the American League, and, you know, and he hasn't even learned to take a pitch. He still swings at over half of every pitch he sees, which is an incredibly high rate. It's the highest in baseball. So even, like, he's got protection, but I think Gordon himself has, his swing looks better. More important, like, you know, the way he attacks the ball looks better. I think he finally made some adjustments. You remember, Binkley, you remember,
yep,
like Justin Verlander talking about, like, he got through that slump where it looked like maybe Verlander was never going to be any good again. And then he started talking, he's like, you know, I actually started looking at the scouting reports. They're like, yeah, man, those were available to you the whole time. I think sometimes with Gordon, there's some of that, like, yeah, you could have tried to switch something up a while, but it takes a while when you've had a long major league career to try to make those changes. But you go like you did the last couple of years, not including the last month last year, and you feel like you got to make some switches.
It's incredible to watch. The other thing we've seen this weekend, Cody, is something that desperately had to happen. The bullpen, not surrendering runs. The Royals are winning games 3-0 and 8-1. They're not losing them after the sixth inning. To me, that's the number one thing of this weekend to take away.
No, it's... yeah, I mean, back-to-back games. Now, the game before that, they had a pretty sizable lead and let it get away. So if the bullpen could have just gone, you know, three straight days, we'd be talking about a three-game winning streak with a chance for four.
Yeah, Thursday was one of the roughest days ever of this team. I mean, when Hamilton gets hurt, Witt loses the hitting streak, even though he's hit hits, five hits and since then, but whatever.
Yeah, that stinks. But yeah, I mean, the bullpen, like, Kennedy was really sharp in his inning last night. Peralta was pretty good, right? I thought he was, you know, decent enough. They got in there, and they, you know what's been helping the bullpen the last couple of days? The starters making sure they've only had to get 13 total outs.
Yep.
Brad Keller goes 6 2/3, Homer Bailey goes 7. Limit the number of outs you got to get in there. Get everybody some confidence so that you don't have to use those guys as much. The game before, if you remember, the Royals were up, but the bullpen ended up having to pitch 4 innings because it goes 10. They had to pitch the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th eventually. And that one inning, while it doesn't seem like a huge deal, is. And the last Junis start, he only went 4 innings. And so the bullpen had to go 5, you know. He's got to find a way to continue to kind of go deep into this thing so they don't have to get to that group, you know, too early, too often.
Cody, who wins the Masters? You taking Tiger or the field if I gave you a choice right now?
Oh, gosh. I'd probably take the field. And I want it to be Tiger. He's only one shot back now, so I guess that's a pretty... Yeah, screw it. I'll take Tiger. Molinari, that's who you want to win, right? Molinari seemed bulletproof for like 4 straight days, including the first part of this day, but finally just bogeyed, so maybe that's a...
Yep.
Maybe that's a sign that, you know, he's finally back in it. So I'll take Tiger.
Why not? And he won a major too last year. So this guy is a guy that's not, you know, can do things without melting down. Cody Tapp, head to the locker room. Locker room opens in 5 minutes. Ned Yost at 11 a.m. Cody Tapp comes your way today at noon for Cody's On Deck show. You got a contestant today, Cody, for trivia?
We do.
Okay,
we
good.
Do have somebody.
Somebody booked ahead of time.
Yes. Yes.
And like I tell people, you could always book ahead of time by hitting Cody Tapp up on Twitter.
Easy enough.
Cody, you going to try and do any of the Game of Thrones trivia that Dusty Likens and Nick Price are going to be doing out there,
I mean,
after your show?
I'd just like to try my hand at it. I'm going to watch it tonight, right? I'm all caught up.
Oh, that's right. Go see Dusty Likens and Nick Price. They're going to be doing trivia there at the trailer, right, as soon as Cody's done?
Yeah.
There's at least a partial possibility I'll give someone the choice between a Royals trivia question and a Game of Thrones-related one.
Attaboy.
For Game 6 trivia today.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Cody
go
Tapp.
I'm going to sit in the Iron Throne.
Do they have it there today?
Yes, sir.
Oh, so jealous.
That's your profile pick, Cody, if you get to it.
Yep. I'm gonna. Matter of fact, I'll figure out some contest to do it, but we'll have something fun related to that. No question.
Sounds good, Cody. Have fun covering the game today, and of course, we'll be listening at noon. The Cody's On Deck show. Thanks, Cody.
Appreciate it.
There you go, Cody Tapp, right there at Kauffman Stadium. I mean, the Royals have been playing better baseball. You know, I was so talking about the Masters in the beginning, but yes, they've done some really good things, Kets, this weekend. Not great, but this team is better in the way that they're playing.
The fact that they've taken 2 out of 3. From the Indians is pretty impressive.
Well, let's make no mistake about it. Cleveland's offense right now sucks. Cleveland's offense happened to come at the right time for the Royals pitching.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
And the Royals bullpen has probably been as bad, if not worse, than the Indians hitting. So, I mean, it was going to be an interesting series no matter what. But, yeah, I mean, for this team, they need to turn it around. They've had bad starts the last few seasons. They need to get this thing turned around, and this is a step in the right direction.
Don't be afraid. Corey Kluber's on the mound today versus Jake Junis. Very good pitching matchup. But Kluber's 3-5 with the 4.79 in his career at the K. Matter of fact, last year he was 2-0 with the .66 against the Royals in Cleveland. 3 starts at the K, 1-1, 6.06. Different cat pitching at Kauffman Stadium than in Cleveland. But it's going to be a good pitching matchup out there today. And hopefully Junis can shut down this cold hitting Cleveland Indians team. Coming up next, the debate. We had Trez Paylor in for the draft special. He and I did a draft special last Thursday. And are there certain positions that the Chiefs can't touch in the first round? Some people believe only quarterback is the only position you can't take. I've got several. Explain next.
Big Sunday.
Welcome back to Big Sunday. Welcome back to the Masters already going. Tiger Woods, 1 stroke back from Francisco Molinari. Was 3 strokes back, but now he finds himself 1 stroke back through 7. Brooks Koepka, keep your eye on this cat.
I say, don't sleep on Koepka.
Keep your Tony Finau, too, minus 10. And Ian Poulter, minus 10 as well. It's a bunched up group at the Masters. It'll come down to who wants to choke and who doesn't want to. And Tiger Woods is not one of those guys that we've known throughout history to choke. Don't forget Dusty Likens and Nick Price, as I mentioned, will be out at Kauffman Stadium at the trailer doing some Games of Thrones trivia. Won't be on the radio, but it'll be there in the microphone and stuff. From there, it's Game of Thrones Day, I guess, at the K. The Iron Throne's going to be out there. And how cool is it that it's at the K the day that, well, the Game of Thrones starts tonight. And don't forget Dusty Likens and Nick Price back at 5 a.m. tomorrow.
Damn right.
You want some live and local radio early? You get it at 5 a.m. with the Game of Thrones recap, the whole through the six episodes with Nick and Dusty. And then the last 2 weeks, they're doing doubleheaders. They're coming at 5 a.m. Then they're coming again 9 to 11 p.m., I believe, doing a Game of Thrones recap. They're very excited about doing it. Yesterday, we started something pretty cool that we're doing on Saturdays. It's live and local radio on Saturdays. You've wanted it. The national programming is great, but I think a lot of you want to hear Chiefs talk, Royals talk, local college football talk, local college basketball. You want to hear local. Well, the leadoff with Brandon Kiley starts 10 a.m. to noon on Saturdays, followed by Dusty Likens and Nick Price on their Out of Bounds show, noon to 3, followed by Jillian Carroll, Kristen Ocero, and Julio Sanchez between 3 and 5. I don't know if you caught any of those shows yesterday, Cats, but I did enjoy driving around on Saturdays in hearing live and local radio from, well, the guys that we all know and work with and gal.
Yeah, and I was here, actually. I was doing stuff over on the KMBZ side. So, I was here for all of Dusty and Nick's show and caught a little bit of BK's as well, leading us off. And, it's really nice and refreshing that we're able to bring you guys even more local content on the weekends, not just through Monday through Friday, but now all the weekends. And then, Bink, you've had your show on this Sunday morning for a long time. So Kansas City gets 7 full days of local sports talk on the calendar.
Yeah, I always enjoy doing this. The problem is I kind of started it after, well, it was kind of towards the end of college football season, because there's no better way to wrap up college football than coming in on Sunday morning and talking about the games.
Oh, for sure.
That happened on Saturday.
So I get ready for NFL. Like, it. Oh, man, it just perfect.
Yeah, it is. But Tress Paylor was in here doing the draft special with me on Thursday night. And it's interesting what he had to say as far as position groups. Now, he wants Hollywood Brown. Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma is fast, very fast. Didn't run at the combine. Put up big numbers, 17 yards of reception, 17.6 this year, over 19 yards of reception his junior year, but he's 168 pounds. And my question is always, you know, can you beat that press coverage in the NFL when you're that smaller? But Tress Paylor says, if no defense, go wide receiver.
What do we need on offense? What can we do? And I think offensive line potentially, especially if there's a center there you really like, Bradbury, be gone. Noah Fant, the tight end from Iowa, still might be a nice Travis Kelce succession plan. And finally, my pick. We talked about him already. He's very similar to Tyreek Hill, who's going through a situation. And Andy Reid would have a lot of fun with him. Marquise Hollywood Brown. I just think it'd be a lot of fun. It'd be Tyreek Hill insurance. And even if Tyreek Hill is with the team this year, it's not like those three can't play together. Between Hill, Sammy Watkins, and Marquise Brown.
He goes on, you can make a case for every position in the first round. I think you can make a case for a lot of positions, but not every position.
When teams are drafting at the back of the first round, the only way they get a guy that tends to be instant impact is if they just draft the best player on the board, regardless of position. So I actually think that's what the Chiefs are going to do if they don't move up or they don't move back. If they're stuck at number 29, they have enough holes that they could take every position except quarterback, and you would understand it. I'm even including running back in that, because, like, if Josh Jacobs is on the board, depending on how you feel about him, think about how the offense changed when
you would go running back in round one.
Think about it. Think about how the offense changed a little bit when they didn't have Kareem Hunt. I'm not saying I would do this. I'm just saying you can make a case for literally every position except quarterback.
Molinari, by the way, just birdied. He's got a 2-stroke lead on Tiger at this point. I don't think you can. You can make a case. You don't touch quarterback. I think we know that. Running back? No. This team isn't a running back away from the Super Bowl, in my opinion. I know some people have put Garrett Bradbury, the center of North Carolina State. That's been kind of the trendy hot pick. And keep in mind, don't believe anything you hear from NFL teams from now until the draft. Usually 2 weeks before. Don't listen to anything. And I know Brett Veach has a press conference this week. You're not going to hear anything. It's all smoke screens. Andy Reid talks tomorrow. It's all smoke screens at this point. And I remember John Dorsey used to have these draft, I don't know what to call them, but he'd invite the media in. And we'd go in there, and John Dorsey would go in there, and he'd show, you know, film of players and the things that they look for. It was very interesting. It was very open by the Chiefs. You know, an organization that's not always open most of the time. Well, it was very open and transparent. And one thing John always said was, when he watches film, who did you play? Like, we're going to watch you not play Middle Tennessee State. What did you do against LSU? What did you do against Alabama? What did you do against the best of the best? And that's easy to know. But the other thing that he said was, and I thought it was really interesting, these pro day tapes where they'd go through video cats, you know what he would look for? Who's there watching at the pro day? Did they send the head coach? Did they send the GM? Did they just send a position coach to watch the player? Because teams will send, or did they just send a scout? So, you know, you kind of watch, not only are you watching the pro day, but I think more in case you're watching who's there. What's the interest level? And that's what these teams do at this point. They try to find out who's there watching you, how much interest is in there. And right now, there's some teams that don't show interest. Earl Thomas. Remember, he was going to sign with the Chiefs. You know what Earl Thomas did? He got a deal from the Ravens. He didn't even talk to the Ravens. Matter of fact, Earl Thomas, and this is not about the draft, but it's about how teams sometimes don't share. And we get a chance to talk to the draft picks, the Chiefs pick on draft night. They have these press conferences where they call in. And one of the questions always asked to them, how many times did you have conversations with the Chiefs? And sometimes, oh, yeah, we met at the Combine or whatever. But it's amazing the guys that didn't have contact with the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs did their homework on them, but you know what? You didn't show that you wanted to draft them. And I know the Seahawks went through this a lot when they got Russell Wilson in the third round. There's a 30 for 30 on it. John Schneider sweated it out because the Chiefs went Donald Stephenson the pick before, and they sweated that out that the Chiefs were going to go Russell Wilson. But they did their homework and thought, all right, we can get him in the third round because we don't think anybody's going to take him. But that's the interesting thing, Ketz, when teams don't talk to somebody, but yet you get them anyway because you're not wanting to play your cards.
Boy, that would have been pretty neat if the Chiefs would have drafted Russell Wilson.
But I'm glad they didn't because we wouldn't have Mahomes.
Another update. Tiger also birdied number 8 as well. So he's now at 12 under. Molinari still your leader at 13. But Tiger just one stroke back, and he just bombed one off the tee at 9 straight down the fairway. So he should be set up well on 9. I think now, and Therese brings up an interesting point that I didn't even think of, because I at least have been in the mode that Chiefs need to draft defense. With these, if you don't take, because you got 3 picks in the first 2 rounds this upcoming draft, if you don't use all those 3 picks to get guys, but you are able to flip one of those second rounders and you know, move up in the draft, I can understand that. But I just, at this point, as much as I would love to see the Chiefs go out and get another wide receiver, maybe get that guy to take over for Travis Kelce, and you know, Noah Fant was a guy that was mentioned by Therese. But I just think at this point, especially with a brand new defense, a brand new scheme, Steve Spagnuolo coming in, you want to have as many young guys who are able to come in right away, and you know, getting fresh guys into the mix in this defense, I think is the biggest thing that's going to, you know, define what this next season is. Sure, we already know what Mahomes can do with the weapons that are already in place, but I think right now it's all going to be impacted on what this defense is able to do. And I'm sorry, but there's still so many holes that we have on the defensive side of the ball that, don't get me wrong, there, you know, if there's a great offensive player there that you might want to take, I can maybe understand it. But at the same point in time, there's so many holes still on this defense that we have to address those as the number one priority.
Yeah, and if you went like Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson's a guy. There was 2 tight ends at Iowa. And Hockenson's going to go early, way too early. That was Therese, one of his favorite players in the draft. Noah Fant, Irv Smith, the tight end from Alabama, I think you can get in the second round. But I can make an argument that if you went first round, skill position. Again, no center, no offensive lineman, no running back, no quarterback. But I can make an argument because you could spend your second round. Now, I went Rocky Asin, the corner. It's my favorite corner in the draft. Because
and corner's a huge position in need.
And not only that, second round is where you get your receivers. Second round, the receivers are falling. And the run of wide receivers, I think, will start early in the second round. Deebo Samuel's going to be there. My guy that I like, Kelvin Harmon, for the Chiefs. I have him mocked to the Chiefs in my 6.0 because he's big, 6'4", 220 pounds. It's that missing element the Chiefs don't have. You know, that Kelvin Benjamin came in here, but they didn't have that big physical wide receiver.
Somebody from the text line, from the 913, Protein House, he with a purpose, text line 69306. Tight end could go first. You could use Kelsey a lot in a split out, kind of in that slot receiver and more like a wide receiver, kind of like what Evan Engram in New York has been doing with the football Giants there for the last few years. So not a bad take there from the text line.
I actually like Jay Sternberger in the late second or third. He's the tight end that used to be at Kansas, went to Texas A&M. And not only that, Charles Davis that I had on talking about the draft, he really likes him as well. But coming up next, might as well talk. I talked about it, the Earl Thomas deal. Earl Thomas almost became a Chief. And not only that, it would have been Earl Thomas and the Honey Badger, according to Therese Paylor. We talk about that story next.
Big Sunday.
And welcome back to Bank Sunday. One of the things Trez said that I did want to get to before we get to the Earl Thomas story about Mahomes proofing the division. And I can't help but watch Tiger Woods and think about what golf courses did to Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods proofed them because he was so good and he was just tearing them all up. So they had the Tiger Woods proof golf courses. What will this division do for Patrick Mahomes? Because I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Raiders do. See what the Chargers do. The Broncos went defense at head coach. They zigged when everybody else zagged. Is that because of Patrick Mahomes? I know a radio host in Denver, Andy Lindhall, that does a show on Orange and Blue. It's owned by the Broncos, by the way. But he said that the number one concern that they have, their callers have about the Chiefs, when they talk about Chiefs, is Patrick Mahomes. That they have to face him twice a year. And never really thought about that, but
sucks to suck, Denver.
Well, I mean, with Alex Smith, Mack, they never worried about that.
Why should they have?
We always worried about the Broncos and John Elway. We always knew that every year they had John Elway. And we always knew that when they had Peyton Manning, and that was a concern. Well, if you want to win the division, everybody's concerned about Patrick Mahomes. For once, we have the best quarterback in the division. Because when Manning was in Denver, In Rivers that's still in L.A., they were better. And then for a while, you could make an argument that Derek Carr was better than Alex Smith because Derek Carr, although it's been up and down with Derek Carr.
Derek Carr was on pace for that MVP season before he broke his leg late in the year.
But there's just no question that the Chiefs have the best quarterback in the division. It's not even a question. So I asked Therese Paylor, will teams be Mahomes-proof in this division? Meaning going pass rusher, going corner. What are their concerns? How are they going to stop Patrick Mahomes? What's the best way for them through the draft to Mahomes-proof themselves?
And if John Elway was smart, he would take Drew Lock and let him sit a year behind Joe Flacco before handing him the reins. The best way to beat Patrick Mahomes if you're a team in this division is to have a quarterback that can go toe-to-toe with him. So if I were Denver, you know that you don't have that right now in Joe Flacco, but if you take Drew Lock, you might have one in a year.
So it's not secondary and pass rush?
I mean,
it
matters.
It's quarterback toe to toe.
It matters, but you got to remember, guys, this is a passing league now. Yep. Like, you can't. It's hard to play defense, like, despite what you saw in the Super Bowl. It's hard to play defense. And you don't have a chance if you can't put up points. You know, at the end of the day, Jared, the Chiefs put up 31 points against the same defense that Jared Goff put up three. Okay, like there's a big difference between Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff as far as second reaction ability and just overall talent. There's a difference, right? So you better make sure your quarterback in today's NFL can get the job done. He's got to be an alpha dog. And Denver does not have one with Flacco. Oakland doesn't have one with Carr. Maybe one of these young quarterbacks can be one. Kyler Murray, Drew Lock, Dwayne Haskins. Shouldn't be hesitating to try to find out. Because if you don't have one, you're not winning a Super Bowl. Not in today's NFL. Not where you can't play defense anymore.
So Trez says the best way to Mahomes-proof it is to get a quarterback like Mahomes. That quarterback does not exist in this year's draft. I like Kyler Murray, But there's still question marks about Kyler Murray.
It's about to say a lot of people are saying Kyler Murray is better already than Patrick Mahomes, which is
ridiculous.
It should be ridiculous because, look, as much as Kyler Murray is a game changer like a Patrick Mahomes, I'm sorry, but until you, A, prove it that you've done it in the NFL, which Kyler Murray has not taken a single snap in the NFL. He's not even on a team yet, obviously. And it just, Mahomes, you know, obviously he's was put in the right situation with Andy Reid, and who's been known for developing quarterbacks like a Donovan McNabb. And, you know, he had to work with Michael Vick for a few years. And I mean, the list goes on and on, but I just think at this point, yeah, it would be dumb for any team in the AFC West to not try and Patrick Mahomes proof their teams.
It's tough to do. And the Chiefs had this perfect storm. I've talked about this perfect storm. An ability to draft a quarterback in the top 10 that could essentially be redshirted. And I've said this too, Kets. Alex Smith, I wasn't a huge fan of Alex Smith, but I'll tell you this. There might not have been a better mentor in the history of Kansas City sports than Alex Smith. Mahomes goes on Jimmy Fallon and talks about Alex Smith. Andy Reid at the Combine, when he's being interviewed by NFL Network, and brings up Alex Smith. Now, if Drew Locke would end up in Denver with Flacco,
that'd be a pretty close second.
I don't know. Because Flacco wasn't real nice to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, but I think this is...
He's worried about his...
That's fair.
That is not the same situation to me. I mean, it takes a special quarterback. Because we've seen it. Brett Favre wasn't open to Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady was not exactly rolling out the red carpet for Jimmy G. Ben Roethlisberger has not been open and welcome to a lot of quarterbacks that come in behind him. Thinks it's his team.
And if there's anybody who has any excuse to not be that way, it is Alex Smith, especially the way that he was kind of thrown away in San Francisco and Colin Kaepernick took over and then they went to the Super Bowl. And, you know, Alex Smith is definitely that guy that if there's anybody out there who can be a total D-bag to an incoming rookie, it would be Alex Smith. But no, the guy, a consummate professional, a guy who, you know, I think one of the most overlooked things about Alex Smith is the fact that he was the number one overall pick in his draft class. And a guy who has, you know, done nothing wrong. He's come to work, put his boots on, and, you know, done everything he needed to do. But he has the intangibles, and he has that ability to be able to take a young phenom-type quarterback like a Mahomes, put him under his wing, show the kid the ropes, show him what it's like to be an NFL quarterback. And, you know, I think it's only fitting that, you know, he was able to go to Washington. Obviously, how his season ended was in the most horrible way possible for him. But, you know, this is a guy who has been bounced around a lot in this league. And it just shows the mental fortitude that Alex Smith had to be able to, you know, be a guide and be somebody that, you know, the young guys can look up to.
And don't forget this, I think he helped Derek Fisher too. Because Derek Fisher, number one pick overall.
Yeah, and
you know,
I mean,
the people labeled bust and everything. People did the same thing to Alex Smith, and I think that helped. I think that helped with Alex Smith.
Alex Smith will be like the James Shields of the Kansas City Chiefs going down.
Now, I thought this was interesting. Do this before we have Matt Lane, Arrowhead Pride, come on. Earl Thomas. Terrence Paylor had broken that story last year. The Chiefs were going to get him at around the trade deadline, which they were. All indications I've heard, Chiefs were going to get Earl Thomas before he got hurt. But Terrence thinks they still would have gotten Earl Thomas and the Honey Badger. Can you imagine that secondary then? This is how close Earl Thomas came to being a Chief this year during free agency.
Free agency was very weird. Didn't really know where I would end up. Was trying to see what my value was out there. And I really thought I was going to go to Kansas City. I had committed there on a one-year deal worth like $12 million. And like the next morning I woke up, my agents called me and told me I had a better offer with the Ravens. So I definitely took that offer real quick.
So interesting. It looked like you were going to wear red and play in the AFC West. And suddenly the Ravens Correct. Just swooped in. Did you have any meetings with the Ravens at all?
Well, I didn't have any meetings with the Ravens. And I actually had got off the phone with Andy Reid the night before I found out the news about the Ravens. So, you know, and the Chiefs actually was about to send me a private jet, and me and the family was packing up, getting ready to go, get on the jet and go to Kansas City. And I woke up the next morning, and my agents told me that Baltimore really wanted me, and they offered me a mega deal, and I took that.
Now, obviously, in terms of contractual dollars, you had 55 million reasons to make an awkward phone call to the Kansas City Chiefs. But did you do that personally, or did somebody communicate to them, sorry, we appreciated that, but we're going to Baltimore?
Yeah, so that was the first thing that came to mind. Just I didn't want to disrespect that organization because they believed in me for that 1 year, and they committed to me. But my agents told me that they would take care of it, and I just kind of let them guys work it out. And I got word back that Kansas City understood my situation, and they were fine with it.
That's Earl Thomas on the Rich Eisen Show. Andy Reid was on the phone with him.
That makes me mad.
And it kind of goes back to what I was saying, that sometimes teams don't really contact you, and then all of a sudden they come in and get you. The Ravens hadn't shown that interest really in Earl Thomas, but then boom. Swing in with a mega deal.
Well, they had to because they lost Eric Weddle in the back, who that's a really good signing that the Chargers made to get Eric Weddle.
Good stuff. Matt Lane, arrowheadpride.com, part of their draft coverage, part of their guy that did their draft guide. It's absolutely fantastic. Where's he leaning with pick 29 in the Chiefs? We talked to Matt Lane, Arrowhead Pride, next.
Big Sunday. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.